Welcome to another Open Airways podcast here at NEMC 2010. Right now we've got Ricky Battle here.
Hi, how you doing? This is Ricky Battle, LA County firefighter paramedic.
And can you just tell us a little bit about a significant experience you've had in the field then?
Oh, okay. We'll jump right into it then. This particular experience happened, it was me and all my regular crew about the middle of the day. And we had gone on, it was about an average day, we had gone on, you know, several calls, about, like I said, like the middle of the day. And we get a call for an assault, which can be anything. In the community I work in, usually it's weird, but it's family member on family member. It's not a whole lot of, you know, you have your gang stuff here and there, but a lot of, usually when somebody's beating up on somebody, you ask them, well, who hit you? It's like my uncle or my dad. I'm like, it's your uncle or your dad. What is that? What's going on here? So we get a call for an assault. And my point is going to be made immediately and early in the run. We stage and we see the police up there, and you can't really see anything. You see them running around, you know, like just all over the place. And so they wave us in. So we pull up, and I'm the patient man that day. I'm the person who deals with the patient that day. My driver, the person driving me, my radio man or radio person, gets out. And I see, I look at the door, I'm looking at the doorway, and I see two police officers. Both of them have their weapons drawn. And so I just glance at it, and immediately I go, okay, so that's, to me, that's, it's about as close as I'm getting. Because, you know, they're standing there looking in the doorway, weapons drawn. And so I go, I just take my time then. So I start cruising on back to my bay doors or my compartment doors to get my box out, my monitor, or whatever else I think I may need for assault. You know, I have a little extra Curlex, stuff like that. And I hear more before I see my partners, my radio man, my crew on the engine, the other three get off and start walking up towards the house. So I'm going, so I kind of hear it, and I kind of look over my shoulder, and I see the one of the police officers, you know, kind of looking, still looking into the house, waving them forward, like, come on, come on. And I look at my partners, and they're kind of just chatting, kind of lightly chatting, and they're walking up, and I go, can you say hell? I was gonna say, I go, what the hell are you doing? And they kind of look at me like I was an idiot. And I go, where are you guys going? And they're looking at me. I'm like, they're like, he's waving us in. I go, he's waving you in. He's got his gun out. I don't care. That doesn't count. Those are two contradictory gestures there. If he's got his gun out, I don't care if he's, you know, he's got a neon sign saying it's safe. It's safe. It's not safe. If it was safe, he wouldn't have his gun out, you know, exactly, which means he doesn't feel comfortable enough with the situation to holster his weapon, which means, and so us, without weapons, we don't get trained, we're not trained to beat him up. That's not safe, so you tell him. And they kind of ignored me a little bit, like, you know, oh, well, it's okay. And so I'll make this point right now, is that immediately, you're going to run into people whose interpretation of scene safety is different from yours based on, we get taught the basics of scene safety, the things you look for. But then you have to add your own personal experiences. My own personal life experiences, I don't want to give the impression I had a hard life or anything. I grew up in the boroughs or the Bronx, nothing like that. But, you know, I've had my head knocked around a couple of times. I've got the knuckle dusters out, and I've had to defend myself on several occasions. So when I look at a scene, I see everything that another person might see, but then based on my personal experiences, I also see, I can read between the lines, I see things in between the cracks that they may not see. And I can, oh yeah, okay, that's not, I can see three things that are a potential. Whereas based on theirs, they've looked at everything they were taught to look at, but because they don't have the same life experiences as another person may have, they don't see a potential hazard where another person might see. And to me, that was a red flag. I mean, I know that, you know, we're trained, you know, the police officers, they deal, you know, they rough them up and we fix them up. If they say it's okay to come in, generally it's okay to come in. But the fact that his weapon was in the ready position, he was taking an offensive or defensive posture, and his weapon out, told me that, yeah, it's not as cool. It's not cool. So what I had to do, and these are my peers, I'm not over them, I don't outrank them, but because of my experience, I had to get a little firm with them. I was like, you know, I was like, no, his what do you mean? His gun is out. Are you nuts? Don't go in there. Stay away. So they kind of slowed it down, and then till I got to the doorway first. Once the cop, they kind of paused, but they act like they didn't want to pause. They wanted to go in there, and they were, so again, you have to be, if you have those kind of experiences and you see hazard, just because they don't see hazard doesn't mean there is no hazard. And if you're technically, I'm the patient man, so technically that's my scene. But it's up to anyone who on the crew who sees any potential threat or harm, even if the other people don't know it or haven't recognized it because it hasn't been part of their reality in the past or anything that stuff like that. It's still up to anyone on the crew, which we're taught, to speak up and put the brakes on that situation in any by any means possible, whether it be a captain, a chief, or whoever it is. And, you know, you bring it to their attention. You do what you can, but in the case of a captain or a chief, technically they can override you, but you put it out there. You don't want to, we've all had those instances where something happens and you go, oh my God, I didn't see that coming. And then somebody goes, well, yeah, I saw it coming, but I didn't want to say anything. You know, dude, why didn't you say something? You know, you could have saved us. You know, it's kind of like in high school, you know, the 20-year reunion, you go, yeah, you know, I always had a crush on you. Really? I always had a crush on you, too. You're like, how come nobody said anything? What did we miss out on? So kind of that same thing. So I finally get them to stop. I wait for the cop to start looking around, like, where are we? I'm going, I'm looking at him like, dude, we're not, so they get it kind of situated. The other police officers go in, and they're kind of, they get the patient or the perpetrator, the misdeed, alleged perpetrator, I guess, of this deed, secured. And so I, again, it's my scene, so I'm the treating individual, so I stick my head in, and I just poke, because they're still at the door, and there's two police officers inside standing next to the perpetrator who's sitting in a chair. So I look in, it's a relatively small living room, and I can look straight in the door, and I can see the gentleman who I figured he was gonna be my patient. So I look in, and I see him sitting in a chair with his eyes closed. No handcuffs, no nothing, not physically secure, but he's got two good-sized police officers around him. I mean, the epitome of what you think a cop is, you know, it's just all meat, muscle, and steel. So they're around, so I'm not feeling too worried about it. And so, and then I happen to see something out of the corner of my eye, and I look right along the wall, and there's a couch there, and there's an older woman laying there, and she looks like she's asleep. And for a split second, because I didn't see anything but just the woman there, my initial feeling, what my thought was, why are her eyes so close together? I go, geez, her eyes are close together. And then I looked again, and I could see the blood spatter on the wall, on the couch. I look at her nose and her teeth, and then I actually take in the whole picture. And I look at her, and I check, and from where I am, because I haven't stepped in the house yet, but I can see everything I need to see. I check for rise and fall, I'm thinking. So immediately I tag her from just my from the door impression as non-viable. She is, I don't know how long she's been there. The blood that's on the wall has run and stopped. So it didn't just now happen. I mean, it wasn't, I didn't get there on the cusp of the incident. So I immediately say that I report to my captain. I holler out, I go, Skipper, I got what appears that I could possibly have two patients, so one for sure, and one possibly DOA, non-viable. So he goes, okay. So I tell my captain and the fireman on the engine, I say, you're gonna do your BLS determination of death or whatever. You're gonna check out the older lady, and I'm gonna go to the gentleman. And so I get about maybe, I don't get any closer than the police officer are than him to him. So I start talking to him as I come in, and I always introduce myself. People say, well, don't tell him your name. I was like, I'm a public servant. I have nothing to be ashamed. I can tell you my name all day. You know, there's no problem. As long as I don't add my social security number and stuff like that to it, I should be okay. So I tell him my name. Hey, how you doing? I'm Ricky Battle. I'm the paramedic's going to be taking care of you today. I said, are you in any pain at all? So you immediately, even when he appears to be the perpetrator of some violent act, that is not my, other than to make sure, take care of mine and my own crew's safety and allow for his possibly unexpected or erratic behavior. He's my patient, and all that entails, he's my patient. So so now I'm looking after his welfare. So I mentioned to myself, are you in pain at all? Are you uncomfortable? Is there anything I can do for you? And he's like, no, I'm fine. I'm like, you sure? Because now I notice he's got some blood on his shirt, and it looked like it may have splashed from when he hit his mother. It turns out it was his mother. And he goes, well, I cut myself. So I go, where'd you cut yourself? And he lifts up his shirt, and he's got about three quarter to an inch long little red lines in his abdomen, all around the umbilicus. And I said, well, where'd that come from? And he goes, I stabbed myself. And I go, what did you stab yourself with? He goes, a steak knife. I went, oh, okay. So I said, where's the steak knife? and because his hands were on the armrest, so they weren't like he wasn't sitting on them, so I could see everything. And he goes, it's in the kitchen. So one of the officers goes in there. He pulls out a steak knife with probably about a 6-inch, you know, standard steak knife, real good, nice serrated blade on it. You know, standard 6-inch steak knife. I go, okay. So immediately, I've ascertained that. I asked him how he's feeling. He said he's feeling fine. And so he didn't appear agitated or anything like that. And again, so the cops were getting a little closer. So I feel okay. So immediately, any kind of penetrating wound, no matter how low or how high, I get lung sounds. So I go, I'm going to check your lungs. How are you breathing? I go through my ABCs and lungs are clear. His vitals are stable. He's calm. He looks like he's trying to doze off his eyes are closed. But if I ask him to open them, they pop right open. He's alert and oriented. This patient is outside of, from what I can see and my vitals and everything, he looks, stable as all get out. So I feel comfortable with that. In the meantime, my captain has determined that the older woman who turned out to be his mother is a DOA from massive severe head trauma, blunt force trauma. And she had exposed brain matter, and he had hit her 3 times with a traditional Louisville slugger, the wood bat, he teed off on her like 3 times, he said. I go ahead and put occlusive dressings, dummy him up with some gauze, and check his, palpate his abdomen and stuff like that. Get my full assessment, do a secondary on him, and everything is negative. He was very cooperative the whole time. We get him in the, do everything I'm supposed to do. We get him in the back of the ambulance, and the officer wants to come. The officer's sitting back there with me, and he asked if I wanted to restrain him. And I asked the guy, so you mind if, for our own comfort? And we had a young lady in the back of the ambulance with us, so I kind of put it on her. I said, for all our comfort and my partner over here, this young lady, you mind if we're going to want to, restrain you just so this for your own safety? And he was like, hey, he lifted up his arms. We restrained him. It was a beautiful thing. For something that had the potential for be to get nutty, and turns out that he had said when the officer was asking his questions that his mother had cancer, and she had lost her medical insurance, and it was the second time. The first time they got it back, the second time was not happening. So she had lost her medical insurance, so she wasn't able to get. They couldn't refer her pain medications and stuff like that. So he said that he didn't want her to suffer. So he sent her on the long walk, so to speak, and that was his reason for doing what he did. And so we got him to the hospital, put him under a psychological watch, and while the officer or the staff was treating him, and that was pretty much the end of the call. Once we followed up, he said we had found out later on that the gentleman had levy any formal charges against him, not like for murder, but he, I guess, on a psychological eval, he was just tweaked enough. Tweaked, is that insensitive? Okay, he was tweaked enough that he got a ticket to the house with the padded walls. So, and I don't know if he's still there or whatever, but and usually when you go there, it's ongoing evaluation. So once you're able to, once they figure you're lucid enough, then they bring it all back and they see. But for at the time, which is about maybe 9 months ago, he was deemed not right enough to be tried, I guess, for the crime of murder, I guess. So again, he was in a mental facility. Long story, but the point being, if you see any hazard, regardless of how, as a new firefighter, new medic, new EMT, you're going to be, by definition, if you being new, you're going to be with guys who've been on 1 year, more, 20, 10 years. And it doesn't mean, we each have, our anatomy is the same. We have two eyes. We have our own personal experiences. They've, at 21 years old, you may have seen stuff that a 50-year-old guy has never seen. It's just, that's just our walk. Everybody's, path is different. But don't you, just from your very first aid, EMT class, BSI, and then scene safety, write it in the ground, put a saddle on scene safety and ride it till it dies. Cause you may, if you see something, bring it up. Don't be afraid of the crusted guy saying, oh, kid, what are you, wuss or anything? Don't worry about it. Because the last thing you want it to happen is that if you've seen something with some potential, didn't speak up, and then you know, and then something bad happens, you know, to whatever degree. If it could be avoided, you could save, you know, lives, careers, you know, physical injury, mental scarring, whatever. You know, you just want to you want to speak up, and don't ever be afraid. You're, as a new guy or anywhere, whether it be an office, the fire department, the police department, anywhere, you're going to get rash, you're going to get crammed. So just deal with it. But like I said, you don't want to have to go home thinking, I could have stopped that. I could have maybe put the brakes on that before it happened. And, you know, and yeah, you don't want to be that guy who should have said something but didn't. And that's it.
Open Airways podcasts are produced by FISDAP with support from EMSresponder.com. All recordings express the opinions and experience of the speaker and do not constitute legal or medical advice. This and other recordings can be found at www.openairways.net.